I don't have to tell you this. You know that the world can be a dark place. But have you ever thought about whose job it is to combat that darkness? The people who take some of the riskiest jobs, like hunting child abductors, recovering human remains, or tracking international fugitives. I'm investigative journalist Delia D'Ambra, and in my show Dark Arenas, you'll hear firsthand accounts from people who work in professions that deal with the deviant and defy the dangerous. Each episode of Dark Arenas is going to give you a behind-the-scenes look at what it's like to investigate the most heinous crimes and most violent criminals in society. You're going to learn about the people who choose these jobs and who stay working in them despite the tolls they take. Enter the darkness of espionage, fugitive hunting, crime scene recreation, and more on Dark Arenas. Listen to Dark Arenas now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Have you ever seriously pissed off your in-laws? A couple of years ago, I started investigating a murder in my wife's family. Why would I do something so stupid? Well, partly because I've come to suspect that the woman who was killed is haunting the house I grew up in.
There was a weight on the bed like somebody was in it.
I woke up because my bed was shaking. So it would be like, shake, 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 shake.
But mainly because I think someone in the family might have got away with murder. And my in-laws, well, they're not exactly thrilled about it.
You are deconstructing an age-old story.
We're going to be more traumatized by this podcast than we were about the murder, I'll tell you that.
There is going to be blowback.
I'm Tristan Redman, and from Wondery and Pineapple Street Studios, this is Ghost Story, a podcast about the things that come back to haunt us. Follow Ghost Story on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Ghost Story ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Please note that this episode contains depictions of violence that some people may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
I remember driving into town and passing this junk man on the side of the road who had a bald head and the words, "fuck you," tattooed on top.
That's journalist David Kushner talking about an old magazine assignment from back in 2004 that took him to Todd Mission, a tiny 2-square-mile town in Texas. Todd Mission seemed like the kind of rural place you'd expect to find on the back roads northwest of Houston. There's a lot of open forest and this old boarded-up roadhouse that used to be full of gun-toting locals. But as Dave turned into the woods, something more peculiar came into view.
A working Renaissance village, almost like a little makeshift theme park.
It was a Ren Fair, but not just any old Ren Fair, the Texas Renaissance Festival. It's the largest in the country, and in proper Texas fashion, arguably the most raucous. I mean, that was clear the moment Dave hit the entrance and stepped through the ivy-covered gates.
It was a kind of a lusty, busty crowd. You know, it's like sexed-up theater nerds, in a way. I remember somebody boasting about, like, blowjobs in the back of the pub.
And a lot of people dressed in costume.
Very bosomy kind of corsets and guys with swords carrying around Flintstone-sized turkey legs. You're in this alternate world. There was definitely a sense of kind of entering into George's world.
George is King George Coulomb. He's the person who built this place. And he's the reason why Dave was there in 2004. To profile George and peek behind the curtain of this fantasy land that he built 30 years earlier.
The story that I wanted to tell was like, how did this guy ride in on a horse from somewhere out west and create a working Renaissance village in the middle of nowhere where people would live year-round or off-season, kind of like deadheads or whatever, following this guy?
For 8 weekends a year, the Texas Renaissance Festival is a day trip or a vacation for most visitors. But since the beginning, it's been everyday life for a bunch of diehards who work the fair and decided to join King George and make Todd Mission their home. And that's the side of the Texas Renaissance Festival that Dave saw as he wandered around George's kingdom. He met jugglers, fortune tellers, minstrels, all who lived behind the Renaissance Festival year-round. These are people who gave up good jobs to move to Texas and make art. And they owed it all to George and his vision.
I found people there to be very empowered, actually, by the freedom that they could have there. This is a place that's in the middle of Texas, so there are a lot of people, I think, who feel really stuck, you know, without other misfits, and they find their, like, glee club. So I think people appreciated that George had created a place where they could do that, let their freak flags fly.
Dave was captivated by the environment as much as he was by the legend of King George.
George is, he's got the reputation of being the man, you know. King George, he's been King George for a long time.
He's the king. Yeah, he's most assuredly the king.
He was like the Disney of his own world down there.
Yeah, if Disney's uniform was a puffy feathered cap, pointy leather boots, and elaborate textiles that might have come from your grandma's couch.
He'd made himself king, and I do think that George really saw himself as that.
After a day of traipsing around the king's castle with his cronies, Dave felt like he'd had enough, so he decided to call it quits.
It's evening now, and, you know, everyone's been drinking, whatever. I'd had enough jousting and turkey legs. Figured I'd head back to my shitty motel.
It's a good thing he left then, because that's when he witnessed something strange.
Right as I got out of the gate and I just angled a little bit right toward where my car was, I heard just shouts.
Startled, Dave whipped around, trying to see what the commotion was. Right behind him, there was a gaggle of festival goers fighting each other.
I was close enough to the action that my natural impulse was to get the fuck out of there.
Dave quickly made it back to his car, caught his breath, and calmed down.
I just thought, like, okay, well, whatever, drunken fight. And then I split, and that was about it.
And then what happened? Nothing. The story never ran. Dave moved on to the next one and never looked back. Well, until years later, when he remembered that old article about a magical place where everybody can indulge in their carnal fantasies. But that wasn't the story at all. The real story begins with what Dave witnessed in the parking lot.
It took about 17 years to find out exactly what happened, which was that somebody was killed.
Murdered. You know, as I hear this story from Dave, I wonder, how the hell does somebody get murdered at a Renaissance fair? That was before I knew what a dark place the Texas Renaissance Festival can be. Turns out, the murder was just the beginning. From Q-Code and Faceplant, in association with No Smiling, I'm Sean Cannon, and this is Crime Waves Season 2, Renaissance Texas. I'm a longtime journalist and producer, and I worked on Season 1 of Crime Waves. And these days I live in Louisville, Kentucky, but I grew up in a tiny town in Appalachia. And being from such a singular and beautifully weird place full of head-scratching characters, well, it makes sense that niche subcultures have always fascinated me. There are these communities where, whether by choice or circumstance, people find meaning and identity that they just can't get out in the larger world for one reason or another. And that's probably why I spent a few years immersed in the music industry. You know, a subculture full of eccentric people and strange social dynamics. So when I heard about this place, which has all these larger-than-life oddballs, and one of the most confoundingly interesting communities I've ever seen, where people seek freedom above all and pretend to live in a totally different world, I said, sign me up, let's go down there and see what the hell it's all about. I mean, never mind that we'd barely have any time to prep, since the festival would be over in just a couple of weeks. So, on one hand, this is a story about the act of finding meaning, discovering your tribe and a place where you can be yourself. But it's also a story about the cost of building a place where you can live out those carnal fantasies. This is episode 1, Mad Kingdom.
Okay, I am formulating exactly the kind of drag that we gotta get you in.
All right, I'm here. I'm listening.
That's me on a Zoom call with my reporting partner, Heather Schrering.
You've been to a Ren Fair before, right?
No.
Never really had a desire to go. Not a fan of getting sweaty with big crowds in the woods, I'll be honest.
But I have seen that one King of the Hill episode where they visit the Ren Fair.
I'm here to talk to Philip Motzinger.
Ah, you mean King Philip. But begging your pardon, you cannot pass in that horseless carriage and manner of dress, for they do not exist in our year 1590.
Man, I love that episode. But yeah, that's also where my Renfair experience stops.
What kind of place is the Texas Renaissance Festival exactly? I mean, we know it's a place so large that they say 500,000 people a year go there. So renowned that people from all over the world visit. But how does that place become a murder crime scene? If we want to understand that, we're going to have to go there. Problem is, we don't have anything to compare it to. Luckily, though, Renfairs are a $1 billion industry. There are hundreds of them. They happen all over the country, all over the world. And millions of people attend every year. So it wasn't that hard to find somebody with a lot of Renfair experience.
Come on in! Aren't you going to greet me in King's English?
Prithee, buxom wench.
That's Mike Stevens, a comic illustrator in New York, but he's also
a Renfair aficionado, D&D player. I went to theater school and know about all things nerdy and weird.
Mike grew up going to Renfairs all over New York with his dad, who worked as a cast member, playing Shakespeare and other notable Englishmen. He's gone to a fair almost every year of his life, sometimes in other states. So he's primed when it comes to explaining exactly what a Renfair is supposed to be like.
It's live storytelling and live theater on a more visceral level. That one episode of King of the Hill nails it. The goal is to make a fake time displacement. You go in and you're not in upstate New York anymore. You're in Sterling Forest, 1602.
And then you end up surrounded by all these Shakespeare nerds and theater kids in elaborate costumes. You know, they're speaking the King's English. They don't break character. That's because the plan is to make it as immersive as possible. You want it to feel real.
There's always the queen walking around, and she's got her high society thing or a joust for her honor or something like that. Right in front of you is usually a minstrel band. Then there's always like a witch dunking and an entire stage show that gets to like pander to the people where like bawdiness, that's kind of the flavor. You want something that a high society snob could laugh at and a mud creature could laugh at the same time. Let's make a food joke. Let's make a butt joke. Let's make a boobs joke. Call it a day.
All right. There's some crude humor. Sure. But overall, it seems pretty family friendly.
Yeah, I've never seen it get that openly lustful. Like everything's at least like mitigated and hidden.
So who exactly attends Renaissance fairs then? Is it just going to be history buffs and Shakespeare nerds?
So it's not always this niche thing. And that's kind of the weird fun thing. There's always that fun moment when you see somebody who like thinks this is corny as hell until the joust happens. And they're like, that was fucking gnarly, dog. And there's some people who you would never know they're dorkily into this stuff. And then it comes through and they're like, I know I'm just a coked out lawyer, but when the Renfair's in town, oh no, no, no. I have my leather breeches and I am a bard, you know.
But do I need leather breeches? Costumes are part of the fantasy, I guess.
There's a fetishization of all of it. Like, you're only looking at the good parts of it. Nobody's going to the Renfair and dressing up like a leper, you know? Except I did twice. But like you want to look cool. You want to have a floppy hat or you want to look like fucking Robin Hood. Because like, it's cool, man. It's great. It feeds into the nature of like getting to be somebody else for a minute.
So I'm there all day engrossed in this fantasy world. Then it sounds like if it's working, I might even forget it's fantasy altogether. And I guess that's the point.
Like, it's an immersion. Some people look at a Renfair and they look at a historical plaything. But the Renfair is disassociation. It's about not being you for 10 minutes, 6 hours, whatever, and not being here for 10 minutes or 6 hours or whatever.
For folks craving somewhere to fit in, say, if you're an avowed nerd like Mike, those minutes or hours can be a godsend. Especially when you meet other people doing it too.
Then you find this safe space like, oh, these people just dig the same shit that I do. And that's always a cool thing.
So you get to be somebody else with a whole community of people pretending to be somebody else, which means you can really lean in.
You get to be, you know, Duncan Ravensworth, thespian and grunt. And then you have a whole cute little costume. And you have fun whenever you wear it because you have these good interactions and go with people you like. And so then, like, why wouldn't you want to chase that dragon 3 times a month instead of once a year?
I think I get the diehards now. You know why somebody might even want to dedicate their career to the Ren Faire. But now I'm curious what Mike can tell us about our Ren Faire. You know, the one we're headed to in just a couple of weeks.
I have never been to the Texas Renaissance Festival. I mean, everything's bigger in Texas, y'all. Like, is it exactly the King of the Hill episode? Is that what I'm about to learn?
Oh, yeah, there's that King of the Hill episode again. So in that episode, the main characters are subjected to the whims of the eccentric King Philip, who's also the owner of a massive Ren Faire in Texas.
This is mead. I said grog.
I'm sorry, I...
Away! A good wench is so hard to find.
Gotta be honest, we kind of wondered the same thing.
Why do the wenches always get the last lunch break?
Because Philip is an ass.
Speaking of which, he grabbed mine again this morning.
Whoever wrote that episode definitely worked at a Ren Faire for a couple years, man.
Unlike his dad, Mike never worked at a Ren Faire. It's because going to a Ren Faire and working at one are very different experiences. If theater school taught him anything, it's that in some extreme cases, you can lose yourself in the role.
You know, you're not thinking the way you normally would, and you make decisions you wouldn't, or you can justify things because that wasn't me, that was, you know, Lord Terryweather. Like, some people, they do this every day. This is actually their life.
And in some extreme cases, that's when the fantasy can start bleeding over into the real world, especially if you work there.
Like, I don't know how I would react to if I was Mike Stevens, normal guy, but every weekend I'm the red knight who wins the match and like throws a flower at some girl in the audience. Yeah, I would. My ego would be through the fucking roof, man. And if you do that every week, you just start lying to yourself here and there, man. And then there's that disassociation. Then you're two different people. And then, I don't know. Problems happen when you're two different people. Ask your therapist.
Seize this wench and take her to the stocks.
Now, we can't say for sure if this episode is based on the Texas Renaissance Festival because King of the Hill creator Mike Judge declined to comment. But if it is, Mike Stevens is a little worried. You know, fantasy bleeding into reality and whatnot.
Yeah, 365 days, you're running a fake village where you get to pretend to be even more powerful than you already are. Holy shit, that is Sauron in the One Ring, dude. Never seen that go wrong, have we?
Whether or not the Texas Renaissance Festival has been memorialized as a cartoon, I do know one thing. The reason that Ren Faire exists is because of this guy named George Coulomb, King George.
So I fancy myself as the incarnation of Medici.
That's him back in 2004 with David Kushner, likening himself to the Medicis, the most powerful political dynasty and patrons of the arts in Renaissance-era Italy. Some say they had more power than the Pope, or any ruler. Now, King George might fancy himself a legendary historical figure, but he's slightly more unassuming when you meet him.
He looked like Jimmy Stewart from It's a Wonderful Life.
He was in his 60s then, tall and spindly with white hair. He had the kind of inviting smile and dark hooded eyes that just screamed, "Aw, shucks." But like the Medicis, George Coulomb truly is a master of his domain. He's the king of the largest Renaissance festival in the country and the owner of it, and the mayor of Todd Mission, Texas. But more on that later. Surprisingly, he's not donning Renaissance regalia at all times. Most often, he wears khakis and a button-down shirt littered with all kinds of badges. And according to an old Texas Monthly profile, that includes one he designed for himself. And this personal crest says a lot. It's composed of a tree, a paintbrush, and a boat for his love of horticulture, art, and travel. And then finally, a phallus. You know, to signify his love of, love. Yeah, that's it. He watches over his kingdom from his palace, right across the street from the Ren Faire, and across the street from City Hall. It's a gated estate that George calls Stargate Manor Arboretum.
There really was a very palpable sense when you passed that gate. It felt very surreal almost.
On his trip to Texas, Dave actually got a tour of Stargate Manor from King George Coulomb. The long driveway to his home is lined with statue after statue. His vision, to pay homage to ancient Egypt, Greece, Rome, and beyond.
I wanted my driveway to be the history and development of art, from the beginning of time until modern art.
His 200-acre estate sits on a lake surrounded by palms and gardens. George designed every detail of this dreamland, from the ornately tiled hot tub and swimming pool that some say is shaped like a penis from certain angles, to his home, the main attraction.
It almost looked like a hobbit mansion. I remember going to the big wooden door, and like it was a woman who opened it. And you go in there, and George had a whole entourage of people around. I remember that. Mainly women, and they actually called him King George.
Inside the house, the rustic stacked stone walls seem to be a little at odds with the overwhelming decor, which fell somewhere between Florentine Art Gallery and Trump Plaza. Everywhere you look, there's gold ornamentation. And the picture frames, the shelves, the arched doorways, all encrusted in gilded filigree.
Even the trim around the ceilings, which, by the way, were painted like the sky.
And then there are the windows.
There are all these enormous, horseshoe-shaped stained glass floral scenes.
On the walls, the light switches were handcrafted from bejeweled beetles. And where there isn't gold, King George displays his other collections. Tassels of all sizes, brass knickknacks, and in the kitchen, rows of animal pelts.
Beaver, seal, fox, polar bear.
Oh, but George was really proud of one room in particular, though.
He boasted of what he called his throne room.
And the throne itself?
This jet black toilet that had this solid gold flush handle and this gold toilet paper dispenser that had big tassels on it.
Look at the stack of Playboys in there.
He also had a huge stack of Playboy magazines, I remember, right around there. It was just super gaudy. So it was Vegas. It was almost like Poconos home decorating, but he thought it was incredible.
That's perhaps because King George didn't always live in a palace. When he began building this fantasy land, he lived in a trailer. And he really is a pioneer, too. When he started, he was just an unemployed stained glass artist. But by 1974, he'd already built one of the nation's earliest full-scale Ren Fairs in Minnesota before deciding that Texas is where he wanted to settle. When he moved to Todd Mission, it was just a spit mark on the map, about an hour outside of Houston. Not even incorporated, just some old mining community that was mostly woods and a few dozen residents, an old saloon. That's where he decided to pursue his vision of building a Renaissance utopia.
The Renaissance era represented to George the most meaningful, happy, productive life. Because every ounce of time, effort, and money went into the glorification of their surroundings.
And that's the life George wanted.
I'm a businessman, but most of all, I'm an artist. My goal was to earn enough money so I could do what I wanted with my art.
For 10 years, George lived and worked on site every day creating his kingdom. And he wasn't alone. Other dreamers, from blacksmiths to fortune tellers to glassblowers, all followed him to Todd Mission to make art their lives. But it wasn't enough to just be the king of a Ren Fair a few weeks out of the year. He wanted complete control over his kingdom at all times. His plan? Follow Walt Disney. You see, in Florida, Disney bought up enough land to run his own show on his own terms. So George plowed forward in a pretty similar fashion. Before the locals knew it, he quietly amassed a few hundred acres of Todd Mission using money he made from the fair. Then by 1982, he owned enough property to legally incorporate the town. Of course, his new town would need new leadership. So he staged an election. In a landslide vote, his Ren Fair followers elected him mayor.
So what are your responsibilities then as mayor? There's really nothing to do it. The only reason you do it is so that we can control our own destiny.
He says the only reason you do it is so that we can control our own destiny. And so, a living, breathing 16th century village with 21 stages, a full jousting arena, and 3,000 costumed characters jabbering in the king's English sprung to life. And so did a lively neighborhood of a few hundred artists who live behind the fair year-round along this dusty road called Ren Fair Drive, in outlandish homes like a pirate ship and a treehouse. Although it's unclear if a sense of community was part of George's Renaissance vision.
For you, does it also go beyond art to just the way that, you know, the sense of community or a sense of the way people would treat each other? And
yeah, don't think about that.
What he says is, I don't think about that. By 2004, after 30 years of running the Texas Renaissance Festival, it became clear to Dave that King George's interest in the fair itself had waned.
What would you say has been the biggest challenge for you?
I don't know. Getting people to wear their hats.
Figuratively speaking or literally?
Literally.
His biggest challenge is getting performers to wear their hats. I'd expect inflation or staying relevant to be the concerns of a seasoned businessman. But I guess most businessmen aren't referred to as king. There were a few topics where George commanded the conversation, though, like art.
If I could be an alter ego, it would be Michelangelo or Leonardo, either one.
And the rule breakers in his kingdom.
Ideally, they would speak with an English or Italian brogue. Get decent man and you'll have no call to be spying. But they just don't want to do that.
And women.
They were in chainmail, bikinis.
Yes, chainmail bikinis.
Man, you wouldn't believe the girl could rent them. They're not beautiful, but they've got everything hanging out there.
That's, they're not beautiful, but they've got everything hanging out.
So he really had a mystique about him. It almost started to feel more like this guy was like a combination of Hugh Hefner or like P.T. Barnum, like a demented kind of Wizard of Oz.
Between the gaudy decor, the way George talked about women, and the way he presided over his kingdom, it all felt a bit performative to Dave. Underneath the bluster, he saw a lonely guy looking for love.
The only thing I want to do now is find a wife. My big goal? Find a wife.
We'll put the word out for you, George.
Get that in the article. Any girl gets just 45 to 55. I will travel the world, live in the lap of luxury. Please contact me.
This was a guy who was definitely kind of living in this different world. Like, he just existed on a different plane. You know what I mean? He enjoyed that.
How does it feel to have your own world? That is great.
Here's a man perfectly content to live in the past, surrounded by people who are right there with him.
And from the people I've interviewed, it seems like a lot of them always talk about, you know, kind of losing themselves in the role that they play here. You know,
yeah, it's great entertainment.
As George explains, losing yourself in the role is part of the fun.
We can provide a platform for them. Time to really live out their fantasy.
What he's doing, he says, is providing a platform for people to come and live out their fantasy. I gotta wonder, though, are they living out their fantasy or his? And just hours after one of Dave's visits with King George, reality revealed a very different side of George's fantasy land. Brandon Smith, a Navy officer, was walking around the festival with his sister and some friends when he saw a drunk guy stumbling around by himself. That guy, named Brent Noland, had lost his friends. Brandon's crew let Brent borrow a cell phone to find his compatriots. While they waited by the Sea Devil pub for Brent's friends, the two men palled around. Brandon even tried to recruit Brent to the Navy. But when Brandon introduced Brent to his sister Kristen, she didn't like how Brent looked at her. She said something like,
"My eyes are up here."
Brent laughed, but Brandon didn't.
"Don't be checking my sister out."
He couldn't have known it at the time, but Brandon's words challenged Brent to a duel. Brent and his friends even called Kristen a hoe when they ran into the siblings again near the front gate. 2 hours later, Brandon and his sister were in the parking lot. And that's when Brent began drunkenly taunting Kristen again. This time he grabbed her. The fight quickly erupted. Brandon stepped in to separate the brawl, but the siblings were outnumbered. It was 2 against 6. When Brandon fell to the ground, Brent and another man held him down, while Brent pulled out a pocket knife and began stabbing Brandon in the back. The other man kicked Brandon, while Brent plunged his knife into Brandon 19 times. Then Brent and his posse took off, while Brandon Smith lay dying in a pool of blood on the ground. Brent told his friends, "I stabbed that motherfucker in the back." Festival goers were shocked by the violence, but King George assured his kingdom that they were all safe. It was just a tragic mistake, he said, Nothing like this had ever happened in the fair's 30-year history. Well, it might have been the first time, but it wouldn't be the last.
Jeez, that was brutal.
Yeah.
It seems like the Ren Faire experience should be the comedy of error side of Shakespeare. By the performers, and nobody else. Not Titus Andronicus among the paying customers.
At the time, reaching for Shakespeare's most violent play was intentionally a bit of an exaggeration in the context of this one bad incident. But full disclosure, we're going to keep talking about some dark stuff throughout the season. The thing is, that's just one corner of the Texas Renaissance Festival. We also want to see what makes the community special, because it's clearly important to so many people. And we didn't have to look that hard to find moments of joy. Like this amazing video from the fair back in 1979.
Let me assure you, it wasn't only the lower class that seemed a bit promiscuous in the 16th century.
It's broadcaster Lisa Gibbons, a few years before she became the host of Entertainment Tonight. She's interviewing this guy who's elaborately dressed as Henry VIII, all yellow and gold, with puffy sleeves, feathered cap, lavish jewelry, all the trimmings. And one other item that I learned a lot about in this video, the codpiece.
The codpiece here is a symbol of one of Henry's idiosyncrasies.
A codpiece, by the way, is this bulbous contraption that covers the fly of the trousers. You know, it's like a fancy baseball cup, but you wear it outside your clothes. The codpiece that Henry VIII wears in this video is gold. It's got a paisley pattern. It's adorned with a pink carnation. I mean, it's pretty big. And if you know anything about Henry VIII, it should be no surprise that size mattered to him.
And so he would deliberately get his courtiers to help him dress with a moderate-sized codpiece. So they would happily go out and put on theirs. But he would appear at court with a small one. There was a panic among them trying to get out of the door, trying to get their small ones back on. And then he would go and change and wear an enormous one. And meanwhile, the courtiers all reappeared with tiny ones. And he was very proud of his manhood.
That is some king shit. Do we need to get cod pieces?
Probably nothing that serious.
But now I want to know if the Ren Faire is way hornier than I expected. Well, we tracked down our buddy Mike again to see what he had to say.
Every single person at the Ren Faire is a dirty little pervert that just wants to have sex, and most of them just get in the fuck pile like it's Woodstock afterwards.
Okay, then. So the Rennies, you know, Ren Faire regulars and all the workers, they turn up after hours.
So this is just common Ren Faire knowledge.
Well, now I don't want to be on the record, but yeah, 100%.
It's like going to church camp, except it's actually fun. I will say that there's a lot of consent.
I went to church camp. I know what goes on there, so I think I can picture a more sex-positive version of that. But I didn't realize people camp at these things. And it turns out the Texas Renaissance Festival campground is huge. It's 200 acres, which means I guess we're going camping. And soon. The clock's ticking. We got to make moves. The season's over in just a few weeks, so armed with this insight, we book flights and order costumes. It's almost time to go. There's just one problem.
So I called and emailed about a dozen people, even some people who Dave talked to before. And it just seems like no one wants to talk to us.
We reached out to someone at the Ren Faire in hopes of setting up some interviews with folks there and maybe, just maybe, even meeting the king himself. But it's been radio silence. We've heard nothing. So in the meantime, we keep digging. And that's when Heather finds a Houston Press article from a couple years back that gives us an idea of exactly why they might not be as open with journalists as they were when Dave visited 20 years ago.
Oh, wow. Most of this is about weird things King George expected his employees to do. And it looks like a lot of them were his gardeners.
Yeah, they're kind of like his henchmen.
Wait, he made one person put a huge ad in the newspaper to find a bride? A loving wife or a loving husband. Oh, he's offering a $10,000 wedding gift and $35,000 allowance. Oh, and healthcare, though.
Okay, but the next part is where it gets weird. The gardener who put the ad in the paper said they did it because efforts to get a mail-order bride from Thailand were going poorly.
Weird is right. apparently George already had an arrangement with a Thai woman, and because he knew a lot about trans Thai women, George instructed this gardener to call a doctor in Thailand and make sure his prospective bride did not have a, quote, surgically created vagina. Jesus. This is your gardener.
Yeah. And apparently, King George would make his employees do public weigh-ins just to humiliate the heavier people, which is public shaming.
Yeah, that's pretty medieval.
So yeah, they might be a little gun-shy with all the bad press in recent years. If we can't get to George or other Renfair employees to speak officially, though, maybe we can find folks outside of formal channels. But when we try that, everybody's tight-lipped. Nobody wants to go on the record. And I'm not quite sure why, until eventually I find one person.
You can't use my real name because it would not be good for me in any way. And you're going to disguise my voice, correct?
We'll call this person Brian. He's a vendor who sells a couple of different products at the Texas Renaissance Festival. And Brian tells me that the Texas Fair is unlike any other Ren Fair. First of all, George is a bit of a tyrant.
George is erratic. I don't know exactly what the number is, but over the last 10 years, people are getting fired constantly. You know, the vendors, you just have to walk a fine line there. George is the king of his kingdom, and don't get on his bad side.
What happens when you get on his bad side? You'll face severe retaliation. King George even admitted as much himself back in 2020 on the fair's official podcast when he was talking about this one time a vendor disagreed with him.
I went on my radio and I say, Shorty, get the bulldozers and some dump trucks. Pretty soon here come the bulldozer and the dump trucks, and the bulldozers are getting ready to tear down his booth.
It's like he comes in and says, hey, real nice booth you got here. Be an awful shame if something bad happened to it. And as Brian says, there's really no recourse for vendors who cross him.
They won't have a location next year. You know, it's like you're not protected. If he's listening to any legal counsel, they're probably going to tell him, you can't do that. It's going to be a lawsuit. Well, he may not care. He may not care.
Like Heather said before, it's king shit. And Brian agrees.
He just wants to do what he wants to do. So he becomes the mayor of the town the fair's located in, so he can control everything. Now, I'm not sure he feels like the law applies to him. And I'm not sure it does in a county that he's mayor in, you know?
But according to Brian, pissing off King George isn't all you have to worry about. You also have to contend with the festival goers themselves. The crowds can be too much to handle.
People are drinking all day at the fair, and then they go to the campgrounds and they party all night.
At the campgrounds, it's not just the Renfair devotees like in George's early days either. We heard stories about massive raves late into the night, drugs and alcohol everywhere.
It's just a recipe for problematic behavior.
Based on what Brian and a lot of other people have said, the partying can get way out of hand, more so than at other Renfairs.
I don't go to the campground because that's where the bad shit happens.
Bad shit? Yeah, like what kind of bad shit?
Rape and murder and drugs and drinking. I mean, you shouldn't be in the campgrounds alone at night.
How much bad shit exactly? Apparently a lot.
Oh, check out this headline from 2020. Fire breaks out at Texas Renaissance Festival. Then this in 2021. Second fire in as many years at the Texas Renaissance Festival. In 2019, three suspects were arrested on a variety of drug charges. Oh man, and this in 2020. Man charged after 19-year-old was shot and killed at Texas Renaissance Festival campgrounds.
Then we find something that happened just weeks before we started looking into the Texas Renaissance Festival during the 2023 season.
Grimes County Sheriff's Office confirms they are investigating a sexual assault.
All I remember is waking up in the ditch. I was staring at the sky. I couldn't feel my body.
Sounds like the bad shit that's happened at the fair isn't ancient history. It's happening now.
Yeah, fires, people waking up in ditches, a shooting. God, I got so many questions, but at this point, I think we just got to get down there.
And now it's time. Our flights are tomorrow. We're about to descend into this madness King George's wrought. This whole weird, wild world he built just so he could be the king. So that he could be free to do whatever he wants to do, to live in his own little fantasy world. As I'm packing up my bags, I keep asking myself, what's the cost of that freedom? And what happens when that fantasy becomes a dark reality?
I'm just kind of shocked at how many things go unnoticed there.
There were a lot of accidents. Like, there was, like, shootings, people getting their tent driven over, people burning their tent down. There's a lot.
I think I've been poisoned, man. I think someone, like, dropped something in my drink.
I said, you are not aware of any assaults that have happened? And he was shook.
I just hear him go, I'm gonna fucking kill them.
They bring in all this money for the county, so what's their excuse?
Three things make George tick: power, sex, and money.
He's the biggest employer in Grimes County, Texas. He owns the law enforcement in that area.
I don't want to sound conspiratorial, but something's not adding up.
I'm unsettled.
Does give me True Detective Season 1 vibes.
That's all coming up on this season of Crime Waves, Renaissance, Texas. From Q Code and Faceplant, in association with No Smiling, this is episode 1 of 8 of Crime Waves, Renaissance, Texas. I'm your host, Sean Cannon. The series is reported and produced by Heather Schrering and me for No Smiling, and written by Heather Schrering, me, and David Kushner. It's based on the series of articles of the same name written by David Kushner. Original music and sound design by John Eckhouse. Fact-checking by Rebecca Nelson. Managing producer is Daniel Rafe. Field producers are John O'Field and Casey Regan. The series is executive produced by Q-Code, and for Faceplant, Stephen Cantor, Jamie Schutz, and David Kushner. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts, and tell all your friends about us. You can listen to the next episode right now. Don't miss it. Be sure to follow Crime Waves Renaissance Texas on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you're listening now.
Everyone needs a break from the real world. That's why we played games as kids, and that's why we should play games as adults. I'm Troy LaValle.
And I'm Joe O'Brien. And back in 2015, we started a podcast called The Glass Cannon Podcast, a show made up of comedians and actors playing a fantasy role-playing game.
And now is the perfect time to start listening because we just started a brand new story.
It's basically Lord of the Rings meets Game of Thrones meets X-Files.
Search for The Glass Cannon Podcast on your podcast app of choice. Hey, life is hard, so come play pretend with us.
Welcome to a journey into the heart of the Texas Renaissance Festival, the nation's largest and rowdiest celebration of medieval fantasy. But what lurks beneath the facade of tights and turkey legs? Well, we dove deep into the empire to uncover a history marred by mystery and misconduct, murders, assaults, and other crimes that tarnish its legacy. This isn't just a fairy tale. It's a cautionary tale of power, fantasy, and the consequences that follow when they all collide. Search for Crime Waves Renaissance Texas on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now.